Welcome to Personal Growth Lifestyle, real talk, real results. I'm your host, Lisa Latimer, and I'm bringing you personal development with personality. Welcome to Personal Growth Lifestyle, real talk, real results. I'm your host, Lisa Latimer, self-awareness facilitator, author, and battle-tested empath. Today's guest has a saying that goes, "You don't have to sacrifice to love in order to receive love." Holly Hughes is an intuitive healer and author, helping women who lost themselves remember who they are, which is so awesome because my book is Who the Fuck Are You? So me and Holly are a great team today. Holly uses her intuitive gifts and insights to help women energetically detach from their narcissist partner and define themselves on their own terms. She believes and wants you to believe that happiness is an option. It is on the menu, ladies. Holly, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
So good to have you with us today.
It is awesome to be here. I love you. I think you're amazing.
Thank you. And we hit it off so amazing when we had our quick 15-minute chat. I was really excited today. And I just feel like you have such a refreshing, cool, laid back, you know, relatable way of just talking about things. And that's what, you know, that's what we want here. And that's what clients want. So I go on business podcasts, motivational podcasts, but my heart really belongs to the women who are where I once was, feeling trapped and hopeless in narcissist abuse relationships, exactly who you work with. And it's why I choose to focus on building self-awareness and really truly appreciate the work that you're doing. So you've had your own experience with abusive relationships. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, it's called a starter marriage. I had a starter marriage and I chose someone who had wounds that I was used to and who was sad, and the world obviously was against. And I thought that I could love him enough to make him happy. And he was 8 years older than me. I like to say the whole relationship was 5 years. It was 23 to 28. I moved in with him, I think less than a month of meeting him. And my criteria was, if I fit into his pants, I will be with him, because he was like tall and skinny and I didn't think I could fit in his pants. So I was in LA and everyone's so skinny there. So anyway, that was my thing. And my experience of him was very much, he just picked slowly, right? Like the abuse, the mental and emotional abuse really happened so subtly until I had given up everything I loved.
Yeah.
I wasn't wearing the fun clothes I even liked anymore. And I lost my voice. I lost my self-confidence. And it took me 5 years to really honestly regain it. So my favorite example of it was like, I get all dressed up and he'd look at me and say, "Your shoes are ugly," and walk out the door. Wow. Like it was always what was wrong. It was never what was good. Or I was in film and TV production then. And I would work 12 to 14 hour days and my commute was a little, but almost an hour and a half each way. And I still had a bunch of people over for a friend's Thanksgiving, like 8 people. I had cooked the whole meal, even though I worked forever, whatever. He sat down only when the meal came, even though people had been there for an hour. He sat down and told me everything tasted like shit and got up and left.
Wow. I think I would have made sure that he was wearing that turkey on his fucking way out,
because you know, now I would never ever put up with it, but then I was just
mortified.
Exactly. I was like, I'm not enough.
And did he
reinforce that? I am not enough. I'm not good enough.
And did he do that in front of your company?
Oh yeah. I mean, I was working at Spelling Television. I worked on that show, Seventh Heaven. That's a whole other thing. And then so I was in charge of doing the wrap party for the cast season one. I had some difficulty with an executive producer because she wanted her friend to have my job, yada, yada. Gotcha. So the party was a really, really big deal for me. And it was like a way to kind of save me to keep working there.
Right.
Here I prepared, I work with Mr. Spelling's assistant, Renee, I'm working with the executive in charge of production, all these people at Spelling.
Right.
Have this huge party, a couple hundred people. I'm like, do I get paid for this? No. Okay. So a couple hundred people, he starts a fight with me and leaves the party.
That's so typical. That really is so typical. That, I mean, that just brings the abuse to a whole nother level when they start doing it in front of people. And when it's something that's so important to you for whatever the reason. I mean, if it's one thing to have someone mortify you and put you down, you know, when it's just you and them in your home, that's horrible as it is. But when they do it in public, because I've been subjected to that too, in the middle of a mall or just in the middle of where, you know, where there are other eyes and ears observing, that really, that kills your soul and your spirit.
It does. It does. Or he said he'd love me as long as I never gained weight.
Oh. That's nice.
This girl's got a booty. So, you know, I was like, I don't know about that. But like, you know, for me now, if someone said that to me, I would be I'm a very different person. But then it was a little picked. When I finally got therapy, my therapist explained it to me. Like, he took such tiny pieces of me for 5 years that I didn't notice. It's like that frog in the boiling pot, right? It's just, they slowly, you know, turn it up. When I first met him, we read the same books and he was creative and he was an art director and it was exciting and he had a leather fringe jacket. I mean, could you be in a leather fringe jacket? Right. And I invited him to a party and I was seeing someone else. I didn't actually think he would show up because he was 8 years older than me. Right. And he did. And I was like, I can't believe you're here, but I have a boyfriend. And he's like, well, when you know what you want, let me know. And he left. And that was just a challenge I could not meet. So obviously I had to live with him within 3 weeks, right? I mean, that just makes perfect sense. So that was my trial by fire. And I worked so hard, tried so hard to make this marriage work. On my wedding day, his mother wore white. And she pulled me aside right before our vows and said, it's not too late not to do it. Because she knew her son. I was his second wife.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So I thought she was evil when she did that. But in hindsight, right, it was whatever. Like the minute we got married, he got sick. He got pneumonia and he moved out of the bedroom and he didn't come back for months.
Oh, wow.
And that, like, see, he had me.
Yeah.
And then he just killed me with indifference. I would come home from working all those hours and he'd be on the sofa and he wouldn't acknowledge my presence. He did not touch me.
Wow.
He would, like, it was just by a million paper cuts. When I decided to stand up for myself and get divorced, I called his mother and I said, what can I do? She's like, there's nothing you can do. You did everything.
Could a woman pick up a phone like before you walk down the aisle with her son? What's up with that?
That's what I was thinking. Like, if my was, he got divorced after 6 months for a reason, but you know, it was his mother didn't understand him. It was the wife didn't understand him. He wasn't understood. And of course, I am so special that I understood him. And that was the love bomb for me.
Yes. And it's so true. Like, they always come in hot, but not with the abuse. They come in hot with the, you know, putting you up on a pedestal, making you feel like you are that one. And I don't know, because I've met women of all sorts of backgrounds that are at different levels of success, like yourself. You were very successful. And so I initially thought that falling for narc abuse was like a lack of self-esteem, a lack of, you know, success. But I see women all across the board that this happens to.
So I only see successful women, by the way. I'm the people who've come to see me to get away from a narcissist.
Yeah.
Are lawyers. They're big, hugely successful. I got successful because I had control at work and I had none at home. And I wasn't even that high up on the totem pole at my job. But that was like one thing that I did. What I learned when I knew I was getting out, though, because I've always been a freelancer. So I was a freelance producer and I got hired by Sony to do a project for them.
Right.
And I told them not to pay me for 6 months.
Because
I waited till my divorce was final. Because that shithead wanted my money.
Yes, that is extremely smart of you. So then if you think about it, right, do you really think that there is such a thing as being narc proof? Like, you could be narc aware, but it makes me wonder, because, you know, I personally was, my first narcissist abuse relationship was with my high school boyfriend. So I was from 16 to about 27, 20 years old. So I was young. And I, you know, attributed that to like lack of self-awareness, which is one of the reasons why I focus so much on self-awareness with my clients and with the podcast and everything. But, you know, then when I start talking to women that I work with and coaches like yourself, and you're right, there are so many successful women that when you look at them, you're like, oh my gosh, she has it all. She would never settle for that shit, you know? And there you have it.
But I think it's what we know, right? Like, so I have a big thing, like I have to say, I never used to watch The Bachelor. I don't know if I can mention that here, but because it's the Rona, I was like, well, I need something mindless. And this season of The Bachelor, he's fine. Let's just give him his props. But there's a 21-year-old, a 23-year-old, those girls, those women, those becoming women.
Yeah.
I want them not to be defined by relationship. Mm-hmm. And we have, even though I wasn't a princess freak, somehow when we're young, we're defined by relationship. My parents met in high school. Mm-hmm. Right? Different era. But like, so I was like, high school sweetheart had one of those. Oh, we'll get married in 1999. That's such a, like, as a, you're just an idiot. But right. I feel like sometimes when people commit at such a young age, you never mature past that emotional place that you met. Mm-hmm. You're not challenged. The world hasn't come at you, and you're in this tiny bubble.
Yes, that is.
And that's part of why you get stuck. Mm-hmm. You literally don't know better. I have a daughter and I don't want her to get married before 30. I told her she can play house if she wanted. Mm-hmm. But what, in her 20s, it's about exploring the world, career, and figuring out who she is.
Absolutely. That's the time where you should be trying shit, failing, falling on your face, getting up and doing it all over again without hesitation and without having to think. I was sitting there like, I can't do this. Or I'd love to maybe live in this state for a few months and do this. But, oh, his job is here. Like, in your 20s, like at 21, I was saying that. That's such shit.
Yeah, I think because we think we're grownups. I honestly do. Like, because I think at 21, like, I just want to pat myself on the head. Like, because that individuation process is so brutal, right? Yeah. And I think
it really is.
The awareness of women who maybe mature past it, you know, whatever. Look, I know my child is willful. I love her. I love her with that will. And I don't want to squish it. Right.
Right.
But so my thing is like, please don't get married when you're young. She's probably going to get married when she's young. Right. But that will annoy me, but whatever. But I really do. I honestly, the other thing I see with a lot of people, clients, is that they marry young, and by the time they're 40, they're like, why did I do this? I'm trapped by someone I have nothing in common with. We grew in opposite ways. My kid is older now. And who am I? I've only ever been a Mrs.
Yeah. You get into that relationship, especially when you do it at a young age like I did, and you don't realize that you haven't matured past that level that relationship started in so many ways. You haven't been. And you know what's funny too is that I actually was challenged. I was actually dealing with the same shitty things that adults that I knew, friends, parents that I knew were dealing with in their marriages. I was dealing with that in my relationship, but with a 20-year-old mind.
Yes.
And
emotional state. It's an emotional state. Yeah. I kind of go into that a bit on my book, but I think you can go through a lot, but you're wounded. And then what are your parents' coping mechanisms? Right.
Oh, that's huge. That's huge.
My thing is like, I also think we imitate what we see, even if we don't like it. So a lot of people will come to me. They're like, I don't know what's not working. I'm stuck. And I'm like, you're doing what you know, but what you know is making you unhappy. You just got to let it go. Like, energetically, you're holding on to, imagine an electric cord.
Right.
And you're getting shocked. And I'm just telling you to let go of your fingers, but you're so used to clenching.
Holding on tighter. Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny you say that too, because when I was 16, and I write in my book too, that, you know, I was in that first relationship at 16, trying to show my parents how it's done, because I hated what I was seeing going on between them, because that happened to be a very tumultuous time for them. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, you know, with my 16-year-old arrogance, because we think we know who the hell we are and what we are at that age, I said, I'm going to show them how it's done. So here's this great guy. He looks so great on paper. He's my age. He's so smart. Da, da, da. And yeah. And oddly enough, that relationship mirrored the exact same ills that I saw being fought about, actually, and then some.
Yeah.
From what I was seeing at home.
Because it's what you know. You have the same coping mechanism. You have the same. That's what, like, we sometimes I tell people, don't become what you hate.
Exactly. Because
that's what happens, and it's an unconscious thing.
And you even said that too at the beginning. You said that it was the wounds that you were used to.
Yeah.
So the wounds that you were used to.
Yeah.
That relationship.
I knew how to love a man who was in pain.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was in pain and I loved him. Right. I mean, I still love him. Right. I love my dad. Like, that's just like, you know, whatever. Right. But that was like what I learned. But what I've learned through maturity is that, are you bothered about something, dear partner, that I love more than anything? I'm here to support you, but handle your shit.
Right.
Because right. That's yours.
Yeah.
And not mine. And I'm not taking it on for you. It doesn't mean that I don't love you. It doesn't mean that right. I don't support you. It doesn't mean I won't be there. Right. And that, I think, for a person entangled in a relationship, is especially with a narcissist, that's the part that gets confusing. How did I go from up to down?
Right.
How do I win it back?
Absolutely. And I love that you talk about detaching energetically, because your energy is drained from you. Like you said, death by a thousand paper cuts. Your energy is drained little by little every day. And then the pieces that are taken from you are then replaced with a different energy, their energy, something that's not even part of your natural state of being.
100%. I call them energy vampires. It's not just narcissists. There's other people that I think there's like a funny show about vampires, and the guy is an energy vampire, and he bores you to death, literally, and he sucks your energy by boring you.
Right.
A lot of energy vampires like to dump their problems. There's those people, right? He'll just vomit all their stuff on you. They yeah. feel better and you walk away. And especially if you're an empath, now you're carrying all their garbage and you're just like, you know, I don't want any of that. I think with an emotional partner, that energetic thing is that, those of us who've had more challenging relationships, we entwine. Mm. We're not an individual. All this "you complete me" bullshit from Jerry Maguire. No, you need to be a whole, complete person.
Yes.
Looking for a partner. You are not a peg. Like, you know, you want to fit in with someone. I recently had a post with like two puzzle pieces saying that you don't have to change to fit in. You're just looking for someone who, like, you know, gets you. And right. I think when I got divorced, there was another thing that I thought about a lot. Mm-hmm. When I got married, for me, my awesomely young mind, it was freedom. I was free to love. Uh-huh. I could try things. Maybe if I was a good girl, I wouldn't before, because I was with the one, blah, blah, blah. Right. So for me, it was ultimate freedom. I had the ring. Someone picked me. I'm so special. Yay, Holly.
Right.
And my partner was like, now I don't have to do shit because I have the ring. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
And I recognized that, and I had to like unwind that thought pattern.
Yeah. Oh God, we get so entangled in the bullshit that we get from other people, all the different ideas, the false truths, the limiting beliefs. It becomes this jungle that we have to hack our way through to get back out to like that clearing where we could breathe and we can see things clearly for what they are. And then we have to decide, okay, you're here. You see things for what they are. Now, what are you going to do about it? Now, what are you going to do about it? Because if you're still in that headspace where you think, you know, that you're powerless and they're continuing to drag you down and suck out your, you know, whatever bit of self-esteem that you have left, you know, you get to that clearing, but it's like, great, now what? Am I even capable? Am I worthy? So it's like then a whole other battle that you have to fight. But
yeah.
Boundaries and taking action, like you have to take some sort of action.
Absolutely. Well, that's where I think like the intuitive energy work, like literally I can see energy. So it's gray, it's gooky, it's cords. We can cut them. Mm-hmm. My favorite boundary with a narcissist, or more challenging people. Mm-hmm. And it's tricky because I know the people I've seen who've gotten out of most narcissistic relationships, the problem then becomes the children. Because mm-hmm. almost everyone has children with them. These narcissists like to breed trophies. Like they don't parent their kids, but they breed trophies.
Breed trophies. And that is, and you know what? As crazy as that sounds, that is probably just about how they look at their children.
But it is. Every person who comes in and then they have to fight for, you know, school and where you're going to live and they're going to manipulate you and like whatever. I just like so much drama. And of course, it's exceedingly painful to be the parent in that because most mothers love their children and they don't see them as trophies. But the boundary, the energetic line that I like to help people imagine is when you go to the zoo mm-hmm. and there's a gorilla or a lion, they're usually behind exceedingly thick plexiglass. So you really get a good look at them. You can see them pounce their chest and like be a beast or right. this lion or a tiger and you see them napping. They're like, oh, they look so cute. And then they come and like pounce. You ever see that video when the lion's going nuts over the toddler and the parents like, this is cute. I'm like, no, he wants to eat your child. Yes. It's so crazy. But if you get to a space where you have that boundary, you can see the narcissist or the person who's caused you so much pain, mm-hmm. but you know, now they cannot touch you. Right. So they can say and do and whatever they want on that side of the wall and mm-hmm. you're there in your fuzzy socks if you want or your, you know, damn high heels, whatever empowers you, whatever makes you feel most you.
Right.
And you could be butt naked and you could still be safe because they are over there and it doesn't matter. Right. Getting to the place where it doesn't matter is the challenge. And, you know, even when you have many great years, you can always hit a dip, right? There's that, right. Ugh, a bad day. But otherwise, I think that's super important. And I really haven't met a narcissist who cares about his children other than to hurt his other partner.
Right. Used as just another source of manipulation, mm-hmm. to drag the partner through the mud. You can't live here because those are my kids and I want them here. Correct. And I'll take you to court and all of that.
Yeah, but then they give up the days that they want them, or then that you get into the game of, I can't pick them up. We have to meet, but you have to drive 45 minutes for me to meet them because, you know, my toe hurts and I need you to bring them here. Yeah.
That was my one saving grace, I will say. And still, even though, thank God, I didn't end up with children from the two narcissist abuse relationships that I was in, you know, I fought for those relationships. I was that person holding on to that electric, you know, current and holding and squeezing harder and harder rather than just letting go. Me with my no children entanglement self, just wanting to not look like I failed, wanting to prove that I was worthy and that I was that chick that could tame them, love them through their shit, you know, and show them that I was, you know, worthy of being put back up on that pedestal that they had had me on at the beginning of the relationship when they came in hot with the love and, oh, you're the one and you're so different from everyone else that I've ever met.
Yeah. Or so. did yours badmouth everyone before?
Oh my gosh. My second one really did that. My first one in high school, we were so young that there really wasn't. I come to find out, just as a quick side note, that the one that I was with in high school from so young, we were both 16. He was being raised by a narcissist aunt. Mm-hmm. He's only figured that out recently.
I feel like he's gotten better. Like energetically, he really wants to be better than that. Like when you just say, talk about him, he struggles because he has habits, mm-hmm. but the heart of him, well, you know, but we're not two. So it takes some time to switch that, but he's like, he has an awareness that mm-hmm. most narcissists don't care about.
He does, because he reached out over the summer because his marriage just ended, unfortunately. And he said, what is your opinion? He's like, you knew me better than anyone. And I would tell him about himself. Mm-hmm. I would still hold on. Right. And I said, you're a narcissist. He said, you're not the first person that's described me as that. And he said, I'm trying to like get this shit right. So he was being raised by a narcissist, but the second one that I was with, you know, he really had me on the pedestal. He he had it worked out. Like he knew the steps. I don't know if it's because he had seen it in a relationship before or learned it somewhere along the way, but he knew the love bombing stage. He knew how to take you through that. He knew the gaslighting. He knew all of the
The gaslighting.
Yeah.
Did he suffer from, does the second one, did he have depression though? I feel like he had depression.
He probably did because he also had a big drug issue that he was hiding from me.
Self-numbing.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what do you think are some common misconceptions that like the family and the friends that are on the outside looking in, okay, at the women going through this, what are some of the common misconceptions you feel like that they have about the woman or about the relationship?
I think that they think the person, the girl, knows what she's doing. Mm-hmm. Or they think that I tried and she's not listening. Mm-hmm. Then I would tell them, try a different way. Just try, because that fear of failure, I think is what made me stay for so long.
Yeah.
Right. Because I used to journal all the time and I didn't realize how disassociative I was until I was in therapy. But the first date that I came home, I wrote in my journal about my ex, the three things I knew I didn't like about him.
Uh-huh.
And my therapist said, go get your journal. And they were the three reasons why the marriage ended. He was controlling, he was cruel, and was something else. And I saw it on the first date, but I could not process it.
Wow.
Yeah, that's so crazy. So I think those of us and anyone in it now, like you might have an awareness, but you might not trust your gut, your instincts. You're not trusting that you're pulling your eyebrows out or that you're sweating constantly or you're afraid to go home.
Yeah.
Right? I used to be nervous to go in my own door.
Yeah. Right?
Like, what am I going to find? What am I going to walk into? What mood am I going to have to deal with?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what kind of tantrum is he going to throw? What's going to be the reason for the
call tantrum? Call them mantrums. You must call it
the mantrums. Yes.
Yeah. So I think people on the outside looking in, if you see your friends slowly either starting to dress and be more controlled and precise and perfect and nothing out of place, mm-hmm. giant cry for help. Don't think that the show is real. And the same is if they start covering up a lot more.
Right.
Like I know I started wearing bigger and bigger clothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. You know, and I didn't process, no one can see my hands spinning around my face, but I didn't realize I was like, oh no, I'm just comfortable. Like, cause I could rationalize anything. If you hear your friend making rationalizations for the most absurd things, then they're so in there. You got to send the lifeline and they might not like it. You know, they might get mad, but if you love someone, you can handle an argument. Like I know the world doesn't know how to argue right now. I know that, but like, let's bring it back. Let's bring adulting back. And can we not raise the narcissist? Can you let your child know that they can wait? They don't get everything they want. You don't have to go to every spelling bee. You don't change your life for the kid. Yes. Be supportive. Don't be a jerk parent. Love them, but they're not always first.
Absolutely.
They're just not.
And that's so important because narcissists are not born narcissists. They are made. I could say that I saw my first high school, boyfriend being made into a narcissist by someone, you know, that he was raised by who was doing the same thing to the entire family, her kids, you know, nieces, nephews, everybody was under that one's, you know, narcissist control. So I could see how they're created and we have the power to fix it by how we raise our kids and how we raise our daughters to, you know, not be narcissists because women can be narcissists too, but to be on to it. Again, I don't know if it's possible to be narc proof, but you can certainly be narc aware.
I think, you know, as you mature, you might become more narc proof because you can see them coming, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you'd be like, ugh, like when I feel someone in a room that I don't like, you know, like not everyone's going to like me. That upsets me, but you know, it's the way it goes. You like me or you don't, but energetically, literally, like when you feel that coming towards you, just walk away.
Yeah.
Or if you're super overstimulated and curious, but it's like a panic, that's not attraction.
And because you think it's that danger. Oh, he gives me a rush.
Yeah. I think that's what gets some of us, right? Everyone's dated a bad boy or two. I don't know if you date them, whatever, but you know, like that rush, but it's never long-term good for you, whatever.
Mm-mm, absolutely.
I don't want to deny you fun, but I think that's like that's a signal. The narc proof part, I think, is like, if you've gone through it and you have awareness and you forgive yourself.
That's, and self-forgiveness, self-compassion is so important in anything that you do in life, but certainly when you're recovering from narc abuse, you know, and like you said, you could have all the signs in front of you and know from the beginning, but you have to understand that it's like this is your brain on drugs commercial. I say, when they have the egg frying, it's literally like what it is to be under the spell of a narc. You are not yourself. And so I think understanding that the person that you love and care about is just not themselves at that time, and that you're going to have to use a lot of patience in dealing with them and in watching their situation unfold, because it's really something that they have to finally see and get to that clearing themselves. You could drop hints, you can offer support, you could say, hey, if you want to crash here, but you know, there's a chance that they might go back until they get to that place themselves.
Yeah. And then you can just like love them through it and give them space. It might be hard to be around that person. I think my brother, when I think I finally separated, he's like, you know, what you want in a person isn't hard to find. Like, I wanted someone who was nice, who wanted to smile and like go out every now and again. Like, he's like, that list is pretty low. Like, what you're asking for is just not hard.
Right.
So you just get so used to crap that you settle for it.
We settle for basic human decency, if you think about it.
Yeah, because you don't really get it after a while, right? Like, you start with it and then you're like, oh, I so you get, the thing is, I think they get you to give up.
Yeah.
You lose hope. So that's why I think the forgiveness part, to be more narc proof, is you really have to forgive yourself for loving someone who hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not forgiving them. It's really about, oh my God, I made a mistake, instead of feeding the narrative of I'm worthless, I'm no good, like that idiot says,
right.
It is, I'm so sorry that I did that to myself. And how do I go about nurturing her and like not blaming and shaming my own self to then do it and pick another one?
So Holly, what, if you want to give us just kind of touch on the process that you take your clients through that come to you.
Yeah. So a session usually is sort of like this. It starts off as a conversation. And while I talk to the individual person, I will start getting information, which is why I asked about your exes, if he has depression, because I feel depression as a headache in the front of my head. Mm. And when you just mention him, it just goes, dung. So that's tricky, but I will physically get pains, aches, feelings. I'll get images in my mind. I'll hear your guides, however you want to call them. I'm not really specific. Everyone has things they wish that were there. Sometimes they're angels. I call them interdimensional beings. I like to say, like, if you pray, it's like getting an answer right away, but it's just coming through me.
Right.
So then I started giving information and trying to figure out, especially let's just take at coming out of a narcissistic relationship.
Right.
People can come see me because they know something's not working, but they don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to guide them there, right? In such a way that they'll come back and heal. Because just like we just said, sometimes they don't want to hear it.
Exactly.
It's fascinating. So then after we talk a little bit and I tell you what I'm feeling, I have a table in my office. It's like a massage table, but you have all your clothes on.
Right.
And it's very similar to Reiki. And I'll move my hands around you because your body will tell me things your mind doesn't.
Interesting.
Like where you're holding on to a pain, like an old wound, like all sorts of crazy things.
Right.
It's like my favorite part. And then I will typically guide you through a meditation just meant for you and what we were working on that day. I'll talk as I walk around the table, unless I feel your mind spinning too much. And then I'll probably just be quiet so I can get the person to quiet down. And it's just like that. I do the same, cause I do phone and Zoom ones too. And I do this similar kind of thing. Like it's the same, no matter which way we connect.
Well, that is definitely interesting. And I love that you, again, that you go into the energy of the person, because energy is huge. Energy is everything. It's all around us. And really, our whatever we give our energy to, we take energy back from whatever it is that we're giving energy to. So once we learn, and I've heard so many women that have been in narcissist abuse relationships and successfully gotten out say that it's, you have to just detach, complete detachment. That energy has got to break off completely.
Yeah. I guess, I think honestly, the women who I've helped with narcissistic, wow, tongue twister now, relationships is that it takes a session or two, depending on where they are in the process,
yeah,
to realize that they became the woman that they heard about. So whoever the man was with the time before, he'll use all sorts of adjectives that he's suddenly, and you're like, oh my God, you're right. You're right. You believe what they say, right? Because that's part of the love bomb, that you're better than that. But then it's your turn to fill the bad person's role when they move on. I find that narcissists have a very specific timetable.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, so a narcissistic relationship can be, sometimes they have a 3-week cycle. One's love, one's makes you uneasy, one's horrible.
Right.
Sometimes it's several months, or it's just how long they do each relationship. I am with this person for 3 years. I'm with this person for three. Like it, I have not, it seems to repeat itself that way. And I find that fascinating. Energetically, what I have to do is turn the person back onto their own stuff. So, because they're so focused on this man energetically, that they're feeling, probably they're empaths on some level, that they can feel his unhappiness. Yeah. And I have to be like, that's not more important than your happiness. Mm-hmm. And that is, I think, the biggest hurdle in leaving those relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. Turning off your switch, your energy connection to that person, closing that circuit just off completely.
Yeah, I cut it.
Love it. So Holly, how can we get in touch with you to learn more about you, to work with you?
Well, I'm on Instagram the most. So that's Holly Hughes Intuitive on Instagram with underscore in between each thing. Yeah. But if you put Holly Hughes Intuitive, it'll show up. My website, hollyhughesintuitive.com, pretty easy. And I'm even on Goodreads because I have a book coming out, but like, so any which way, just not Facebook or Twitter.
Yeah. Oh gosh. I'm off of Twitter now completely. I had to give it a rest. I'd like to give it all a rest, but
I think I aged out of Twitter. I just do.
Very evil.
Exactly.
Holly, thank you so much for being with us today. And of course I will have all of that linked in the show notes. And I look forward to having you back on soon and working with you again, because you are just a wealth of information and insight.
Oh my God, Lisa, you're the best. Thank you so much for having me. I sincerely enjoy talking to you.
Oh, me too. Definitely. Thanks again, Holly.
Are you ready to become your most valuable asset? Book a free chat with me at lisalatimer.com. From there, you can grab my Amazon bestseller, Who the Fuck Are You? Increase self-awareness to gain clarity, silence fear, and create fulfillment in life and business. You can also check out my courses, Self-Aware Goal Setting, and Speak It Into Existence, with more courses to come. I'm Lisa Latimer, and I'm helping you make personal growth part of your lifestyle.